to But What If I Soar podcast. With your host, Dominique, licensed professional counselor and certified clinical trauma professional and owner of Free to Be Counseling Service, and Deveron, licensed social worker and certified life coach and owner of Social MacGyver. The thought-provoking podcast that explores the complexity of mental health through a lens that does not require a prescription. We will explore a wide range of topics with engaging discussions and personal anecdotes that provides a realistic outlook while actively engaging in our own self-discovery. Let's get ready to soar together.
I am your co-host, Deveron Flint, Social MacGyver.
And I am Dominique Flint, Free to Be Counseling Services. It's been a minute, but we're back.
We're back like we never left.
Right.
Got a little crazy. But we feel like it's important to keep this podcast going on. We really do enjoy it. So we decided that, we had to make some time in our busy, crazy lives. So.
Yes. So... from our last episode, we were talking about doing like a series on Black children and children of color and mental health. And so today we want to pick up back with that topic. If you all remember from last episode, we only got through a few questions because we can definitely get very passionate about this topic. So we foresee that this is going to be probably a pretty lengthy series, which is okay. So we wanted to kind of just start off with, again, how we do every episode with some, one high and one low, from, really the last maybe month and a half, 2 months. Cause I think our last episode was released. Wow. I don't know. March 28th. I didn't realize it was that long. Okay. So we have had quite a bit. We have had quite a bit. So April, all of April and all of May. So 2 months. Okay. Yeah. So Deveron, anything you would like to share about one high and one low?
So some highs are one of the reasons why we had a couple, weeks of breaks is I've been traveling a lot for work. A lot of conferences that I attended, back-to-back conferences that I really enjoyed, a lot of wealth of knowledge that I gathered. Really got to connect with my coworkers that are amazing. And we also were able to, I won't say goodbye, but just say see you later to one of my coworkers. She retired. She's a beautiful individual. Just someone who always reminds you to take each moment, consider yourself. Self-care is so important. She always tells us how to deep breathe, checks in with us, meditation. She always reminds me to take my vitamins and she's just a really, really good person. When you walk into a room, you could just feel her energy. And so that was really good to just celebrate her and just show her how much she meant to us and just the impact that she had. Even though I have only been with the team for going on almost a year in October, she's had such a major impact on me and the team in general. And she's just amazing. So that was great. I also have another kiddo in my house, a baby, who I love deeply. And she has been getting all of our love and time. So trying to figure out what that looks like for us, while we are, being caregivers to my niece who just graduated from high school. So celebrating her. Celebrating my nephews and making sure that we stay on them and their academics and all of the things that they want to do outside of their schooling. I've been busy. Okay, I've been busy.
Yeah.
A high is for me to wrap it all together is that, I was talking to my coworker the other day and I was like, sometimes we ask for things and we want things to look a certain way. And you know, it doesn't happen and we might get disappointed. But like I always tell people, what is for you will come to you. It may not come to you the way that you identified it should look, but it always comes to you. And I will say, like, me and my husband, you know, had wanted a family, and, you know, for whatever reason, we had our challenges. And now, be careful what you ask for.
Girl.
Because
we you got a whole motherfucking family over there.
Girl, a whole family. But the thing is, like, I wouldn't change it for anything. I love the kids. They make me a better person. They make me even more motivated. I've tried to figure out how to balance it all, which, you know, take it day by day, but, they are our, like, they're our family, and we have our little, you know, blended, created family, and it just works. And it's something that I like wake up every day and I'm just so happy for and like blessed about, even when I'm tired or, you know, there's tons of things to do. I love it. So that is a major high that, you know, we added to our family. We have our dogs, and we are just making it work. And like, I really love that my husband has been able to just like pick up and go, and he like doesn't stop. Like anything that, you know, if I come to him, I'm like, hey babe, like this is going on. He's just like, all right, we'll figure it out. Like, so it's always good when you have a supportive partner and you guys can support each other, in your goals and aspirations, but also with, you know, your bonus kids. And, you know, my niece and sending her off to college, and we're getting prepared for that. Supporting my nephews and now supporting my baby niece is amazing. And I will say another high is also having the opportunity to assist my younger sister and knowing that it's never too late to, you know, pull your life together. But you do need to have supports, and you can still hold people accountable without enabling them, but you can still support them. And so I would say like, that's a high as well. It's like, you know, supporting her while holding her accountable, has been a good thing. Low, I would say just finding time to do it all. I wear many hats and many capes. And I really do it well. But it might look well, but on the inside, it's like, ah.
I am, freaking out.
But that would say not like a low, but just like, again, I'm someone who likes things in order. I like to have like a plan, and you know, you have a kid and you have a husband, so you know that you can have a plan, and that does not mean that your children are going to fall in line. It does not mean that your spouse is going to fall in line. It doesn't mean that your job is going to fall in line, right? So constantly having to adjust and be flexible when you don't want to be is can be a low, but again, you know, I'm very blessed, so I will continue to just be appreciative. And again, I have mastered the art of pivoting, and so that's what I will continue to do. So,
You have had a lot go on, in the last couple of months. Not that I didn't know, but like when you hear it all,
we keep life exciting. You know, that's what we do. How about you?
Oh man. Let's see. So I think when we were recording our last episode, I was in kind of this trying to decide if I was going to kind of be kind of partner with this online magazine who had reached out to me about doing like being an executive contributor to their magazine called Brains Magazine. I was like, how'd they find me? Like, is this a scam? Like, what's going on? What's really good, you know? And after much research and just kind of, you know, just sitting with it, I had decided to go forward with the partnership with this magazine. It's a digital magazine that kind of specializes in having like experts in their respective fields of like health and wellness and, you know, kind of self-help and a couple other, you know, areas just kind of contribute to the digital magazine by, you know, writing articles and things like that. And so, I mean, I definitely knew that I wanted to do something of the sort, because when I created my website, I created a blog section because I knew I wanted to like write blogs or articles or something like that. And so when this situation came up, it was like kind of like motivation for that, because I mean, I had the blog section there, but I really hadn't been tapping into it, you know, just wasn't really doing anything. So anyway, I released the executive or the exclusive interview came out first, and I'm working on a second article now. I'm hoping I had a goal of, cause I have, access to writing 11 articles after the executive, or exclusive rather, the exclusive interview. And I wanted to like release it at the top of every month, like the first or second Friday of every month. And I'm probably not going to make that deadline, but I'm okay with that. That's just kind of like, but I kind of was procrastinating. I had a couple ideas. I mean, I kind of wrote a list of like some topics I would love to write about. And then, you know, I just got tired or just didn't dedicate the time that I needed to really write the articles, because, you know, you have to proofread them and, you know, you want them to be, you know, you want them to be decent enough to be published in a digital magazine, right? So it takes some effort that I just honestly just wasn't given the time to. So my work schedule right now is a little bit, which I'm not happy about, but my work schedule right now is a little bit open. So I'm going to use that time this week to try to finalize the article a little bit. And so, yeah, so I'll be working on that. So that's been going well. That's a high for me. We got to spend some time with you all a few weeks ago. So that, or not even like, I think last weekend. So that was, a high. We got to celebrate, Carmen's graduation. And then I have a friend, surprisingly, that lives like 10 minutes away from you all. So we stayed with them, and it's been a while since I've seen her. And it was a much needed trip. I haven't seen her in a while, and her daughter is my goddaughter, so I got to spend some much needed time with her, and, you know, Savon and her got to interact, and it was just a good time. It was just a really good time. So that was much, much needed, even though, you know, it's hard sometimes, you know, getting in the car and doing a 5-hour drive, and, well, I didn't drive, but yeah, so I mean, that was, you know, tough, but, you know, it was definitely worth it. So, and then a low, what will I say? I think what I've been experiencing lately has been, not much, but just habits of like ruminating and rehashing things in my mind, and just needing to, like, you know, once a situation is over, just kind of, and this isn't anything in particular that even has recently happened. It's like stuff that has happened, you know, and I just sometimes get into this habit of rehashing it in my mind. And so really just trying to separate that from, because it's not, you know, it's not happening now. And, you know, I just need to, you know, kind of separate that and keep it moving. So that's something that I have, you know, continued to work on in therapy. And that has, you know, some days is, most days recently have been better than others, but there are moments. And so I am just, you know, just trying to separate myself from that, because it's not helpful, you know? But I would say that would probably, my schedule at work is it's summertime, and, you know, anyone who has worked in private practice or really any kind of, you know, counseling modality or setting, summertime is always a low time. And so I'm trying to battle that and just not overthink it a little bit, and just really what I'm doing is I'm looking for other opportunities to, you know, because again, I'm a licensed professional, so I can work, you know, as a contractor or whatever. So I don't have to really look for a new job. I can definitely just be open to other opportunities where I can, you know, see clients, you know, at my discretion, you know, places where I can, you know, maybe just put in an extra 6 or 7 hours a week or whatever. So I am looking into that. Just, you know, trying to keep those options open, especially because the practice, I mean, I have designated hours for the practice right now, but it's, again, it's the summertime and I only have one client that I'm seeing. So I can really use those hours to see clients somewhere else until, you know, something picks up. So I'm just trying to play around with that a little bit because I still need to pay these bills. So, so yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, congrats on the writing, you know,
you.
With the articles. I think that is like a major accomplishment.
Thank you.
And even though you have your goal, we just talked about this, mm-hmm. You know, life, my one
life
friend, coworker says life be lifin'. So,
man,
you know, it's good that you are not like focusing like, oh, well, I have to do this. And if I don't do it, like, I feel like I'm not, you know, hitting my mark. So it's good mm-hmm. that you're flexible in that and you're pivoting. I think
yeah.
that's good. And the same thing in regards to, you know, summertime, it's so difficult when you have clients. People love to make appointments and not show for them.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
We'll have cancellation fees now for counseling.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, mental health doesn't stop in the summertime, but some people are like, look, I'd rather go and have fun. I don't want
right.
to talk to you right now.
Yeah.
So yeah, I completely understand wanting to figure out, you know, how to supplement it being a little bit slower in the summertime. The good thing is that, well, I don't know how good it is, but it always picks up in the fall. The holiday
I know.
Brings in the referrals. So you know,
yeah, that is true.
So that's something to definitely look, you know, I guess you could look forward to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you're helping people get through things. So I think mm-hmm. that's a positive.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, so that's what's going on with us. So hopefully we were not gone too long, but we are back and we definitely want to continue to talk about, you know, children, Black children in particular, and children of color and mental health. As we know, it is you know, just with some social factors, I would say, you know, that we kind of touched on. There is definitely a lot of struggles that, you know, that the kids go through. And so we thought it would be important to highlight that. So to kind of pick up where we left off, we want to talk a little bit about media influences, which there are lots of media influences, especially now with a lot of like different ways of creating content and not necessarily it needing to be done in a way that is like kind of organized or structured or even regulated is really what I'm thinking about, right? Because there's lots of ways to do this without the same metrics of before. So I'm curious what you think about how media or how does media representation affect the mental well-being of Black children or children of color, and what role can caregivers play in fostering positive media experiences?
So I think like social media is something that we talk about a lot, right? So mm-hmm. One of the trainings that I was able to be a part of was with the DEA, and they were talking about how social media is the new street corner. Mm. And I thought that statement was like, you know, how is that the new street corner?
Right. But
then they went further into it and were saying just how like powerful social media is and how, you know, kids can use different emojis to basically make a drug deal. And they're innocent looking emojis. And so you wouldn't know, you know, anything of the sort if you didn't know what those emojis meant, right? And so it got me thinking about just how much social media allows access to things that we typically would not have access to.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it used to be where we talked to older people about 24/7 news, right? And how dangerous that could be if you didn't kind of like monitor yourself and realize the impact that it had on you, right? And now we have this social media and we have so many different apps, right? And kids are getting younger and younger and having phones. And so the access to that information can be all the time, you know, for even adults, you see them as soon as they wake up, they pick up their phone. For kids, you know, they are, again, consuming large amount of data. And it's not always fact-checked. It's not always appropriate. Mm-hmm. And it can create this illusion that you're missing out on something, that, you know, you are lacking something. You know, it used to be when we were growing up, the things that we saw were, you know, we still watch TV and things like that, but it was like, oh, that's TV, right? And then I couldn't imagine growing up the way that we grew up and having this unlimited access to social media. And when I was in high school, you know, we had like Black Planet and MySpace
was becoming
popular, but it wasn't until I was in college that it was like really popular. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't imagine like living the way that I did and all of the experiences I had and then having this unlimited access to social media and seeing influencers and seeing, you know, not even just influencers, but seeing like people being killed on social media, talking about, you know, kids committing suicide and things like that. And so, you know, when you think about, I remember when I was growing up, there was this big news coverage about someone had created a YouTube video about how to commit suicide. And it was like this big thing about like, you know, how that shouldn't happen. And I remember there was also coverage about people who were creating videos about bulimia and things like that. And for me at my age, I was young. It wasn't even like I knew it was bad, but it wasn't like something where I was like too concerned because in my world, that just didn't exist. Right. But I could imagine parents who in their world it did exist and how scary that was that their kid could literally log on, you know, at the time we didn't have like smartphones. So log on to their computer, go to the library and pull up this YouTube video. And at that time we didn't have like age restrictions on YouTube and stuff like that, but could pull up a video and find out like, hey, you're committing suicide. And like, I will say the videos were very suggestive. They were very encouraging if you wanted to end your life, you know, that you should do it. And so now I think about how if someone is experiencing certain things, like if you're struggling with depression, anxiety, you could just pull up Instagram, TikTok, and just put that in the search bar. And all types of videos that use that hashtag are going to be pulled up. And they're not always positive. They're not always fact-checked. And they can just really worsen what you're feeling. Also, even if you're not like actually seeing a therapist, seeing someone who's a professional, getting your information off of social media can be also harmful, right? Because we know that kids are impressive. Like, you know, they are able to see something and, you know, maybe they're not getting attention at home. Maybe they're not getting the attention they want. And now they are seeing like, you know, they saw a video or a couple of videos where someone's talking about being depressed or having anxiety and they got a lot of attention. And so they want that as well. Right. And so that could just create, some concerning behaviors, right? I think the other thing that the access to social media has caused for minorities is a lot of racism, a lot of out and about just negativity. And I was thinking about this today when we were getting ready to come on here. And I was thinking about, like, even with this new WNBA coverage of, and I'm not even going to lie and say that I watch sports like that, because I don't. I choose my sports teams by their jersey colors. But
I love it.
I will say, like, you know, the media coverage for players who are minorities and how they play the game is very different than those who do not identify as minorities, right? And even like this protection of, we have to protect this, I think her name is Caitlin Clark. Wonderful basketball player. Can't take anything from her. But the thing is that we oftentimes cheer on people playing the game a little rough, right? We do. We like that. We feel like they are really into it. They, you know, they take their game serious, you know, all of these other things. And then when someone plays it a little bit harder, and she is the person who is impacted by it, now all of a sudden we are, you know, depicting these female minority players a certain way. When, I think her name is Angel Reese.
Angel Reese.
Mm-hmm. Okay. She literally got choked in the game.
Like choke slammed.
Like, whew. And she bounced back up. But I'm like, no, I did not see that news coverage for her, right? And so, again, I think that this is also something that can amplify feelings of, you know, how you identify and how you look at yourself, especially if you do not have caretakers who are speaking light and positivity into your life. There was just a graduation video. Didn't have a lot of context, but clearly it was a African-American member of the staff, and he is congratulating everyone.
He was like, he's the superintendent, actually. Yeah. He's superintendent. Yeah.
Yes. And so he's being very friendly, congratulating everyone. And we clearly see a parent come onto the stage and doesn't block his child from shaking her hand. He literally walks this, like, pulls him off of the stage. And again, there's not a lot of context, but we clearly know that they're, you know, because everybody else on the stage was Caucasian. He didn't touch them. So again, it's just one of those things where I think media can play a major part on how we identify, how we view ourselves, how we see the world as how they view us. And that can also heighten negative feelings and negative identity. You know, I just think that that's something that the media definitely can play a major role in. And even how they explain situations and cover things, minority students, especially male students, they're quickly looking to see if they have any juvenile delinquency history. You know, even when they explain, I watched one news article was talking about a boy who, very intelligent, got amazing grades, and he was being basically bullied for his dreads. And it wasn't like his dreads were like unkept or anything like that. Looked amazing. And the comment section of adults who were commenting on this post were like, it was mind blowing. And so again, when you, as an adult, when we are looking at social media and we read the comments or we see coverage of something, it can take us back, right? And we have, I would say, more life experience and more coping skills that we can process it, you know, correctly or hopefully correctly. But as a child, you know, there's things that you don't know how to process it. You don't know what until you know, right? And so I just cannot even think about these young kiddos who are going online and it's like the wild, wild west. And they are having access to these articles, these videos, these, you know, anytime something happens in the media, you literally see videos of it. And there's sometimes they put like a warning, but it takes a while for that to even happen. And so like you literally could just be scrolling down your timeline and you have access to things that are very triggering. Look at the video with Cassie and Diddy, you know, you again have access to things that you typically would not have had access to. And there's no context or anyone saying like, you know, let me talk to you a little bit more about, let's process this, right? Oftentimes they're processing it themselves or they're talking with friends. And again, if their friends are like-minded individuals like they are, they're only processing it from the context that they have as well. So I think like, those are things that really have an impact on children, especially minority children on social media. If you're not going to get into like political stuff, but like, you know, what's happening in Gaza and, you know, all of that, like I literally would log on and I would just see like videos of like babies and oh my gosh, it's horrible. And it's like,
horrible.
I couldn't imagine, not even just that in Congo, you know, there's just so much stuff that's going on. And as an adult, it's hard to kind of process and figure out. And I think as a kid, to have that unlimited access to this knowledge, it's concerning. It's really concerning.
Absolutely. I think the one thing that I would add to this is part of the question is how do caregivers foster positive media experiences? And I think that is our job as adults. You know, it's our job to put limits on this type of stuff, you know, whether that's like you don't have access to social media, whether it's your access is being monitored, heavily monitored by me. That means I'm having access to all of your, you know, electronics so I can, you know, kind of check and see what's being talked about, what you and your little friends are sharing, your little text messages, like, you know, like you, because again, I always go back to, you know, recognizing that, like, you know, not to get all, you know, nerdy or whatever, but like, you know, the brain is not developed yet and the brain is still developing and we still don't know. Well, I think in some ways we do, but we're still learning about how the brain has been impacted, how the developing brain has been impacted around technology and social media. And while I do think there are some benefits to, you know, technology and social media, we also have to be mindful of how we're preserving our kids' innocence and just what they have access to. You know, it's a lot to be concerned with. So I think that one thing that we can do as adults and as caregivers and parents, and just like, even if you're not a parent, but you just have close proximity to children, like that you can, you know, be having conversations with them and be very, you know, be heavily strategic on like what they're watching, what they have access to. And I will even go a step further. I'll say that because when I think of the question about media influence, I also think about, you know, not just social media, but like television and like what you're in and other forms of media and how you're not just being strategic about what they have access to, but also what you are actively and purposely exposing them to. So like for me, I don't really watch mainstream media. You know, when it comes to news, I generally try to watch independent media. And what I would say now is, you know, there are lots of individuals who we did see in corporate media who are now creating their own platforms, right? So you have a Mark Lamont Hill who has his own media platform on YouTube. You have a Don Lemon who has his own media platform on YouTube. You have the Young Turks who is probably the leading progressive media platform. They've been around for at least the last 20 years or more. I personally also watch Roland Martin, who specifically dedicates his media platform to not just, you know, news, but he's the only, you know, Black-owned media company who dedicates 2 hours a week, 2 hours a night to news that is specifically, you know, targeting Black people and Black issues, right? Whether it's economic issues, whether it's the election, whether it's you know, police brutality, whether it's education. He does a section every Wednesday on like business. So again, like these are some of the things. And every person who is on Roland Martin's show is a Black professional. If you only watch mainstream media, you would really think that there was like a good dozen Black people just being passed around these media, these mainstream media corporate companies. I mean, every time I turn on Roland Martin, it's a new Black person, new Black professional, new Black expert who is talking about something. And I think that's also important, right? I want my son to know that, like, don't be fooled by the fact that we don't occupy these spaces and that we're not capable of occupying these spaces, you know, as an expert level professional, you know, not that that's the only important aspect, you know, of as far as career goes, but like we also can occupy those spaces too. Right. So I think that's just as important as, you know, kind of protecting your kids from what they're watching, but also being intentional about what they're watching. And, for me, you know, I care about everyone, but I care about Black people, right? So I'm going to make sure that I'm intentional about what I'm watching. I'm intentional about what I'm exposing myself to, and really what I, you know, as my son gets older, being mindful of what he's exposed to. And I want him to, you know, have access to Black things. I want him to know that, like, you occupy these spaces too. And you're not an anomaly. You know what I mean? That you are amongst a lot of other great influences. You know what I mean? And so I think that's something that we have to be mindful of. And I think, you know, the plus to me around this shift and, you know, kind of getting away from corporate media. I mean, you know, think about all these streaming services and all these ways that people just have access to more access to content. I think that, you know, does make it somewhat easier to be strategic about what you're, you know, allowing your kids to have access to as far as content. But I just think we also have to be mindful of what they have access to and how are you taking the lead on protecting them from it? You know, because, you know, there's just so many savvier ways to corrupt these young people, you know? And so I think we have to be mindful of that.
I definitely agree. I agree with all your points. The next question is creating safe spaces. What strategies can parents and caregivers employ to create a safe space for children to express their feelings, ensuring they feel valued and understood? So I think one of the things is to talk to your kids and allowing them to know, like, what they say matters. Obviously, how you say things matter as well. So I think, like, when people talk about safe spaces, especially the older generation, sometimes they look at it as like your kid can just talk to you any type of way. And that's not what a safe space means. Safe space means that you are giving your child a space where they can feel validated. They can be honest. But again, it does not mean that they just have the free for all where they could just say whatever and talk to you any type of way. That's not a safe space. Because the safe space has to also be safe for you, right? Mm. And so I think that, you know, having these check-ins where your kids can talk to you about what is going on with them and they know that you're going to process it with them, even if they tell you something that may be hard to digest. I think it's important because the thing that me and my husband always say, like, if your kids are not talking to you, they're talking to someone else. And I would rather them come to us and talk to us about something so that we can give them our input and we can help shape them and mold them with the values and beliefs that we as a family hold dearly, instead of letting someone else guide them. Because the thing is, they're going to talk to somebody. And so we would rather them talk to us so that we have some type of input in what they're facing. Your kids are not in a bubble, unfortunately. As much as people want to think, they are going to be impacted outside of your home. And so it's really important for you to have a space where your kids can process things with you in, again, a non-judgment way. But again, also holding them that they need to say things a certain way. Like, they can't just come out and just be talking crazy, because that's just not going to fly, not in our household. But like, our boys know, and my niece knows, and one of the things that we will definitely teach my younger niece is, you can come to us about anything. Like, anything that something's bothering you, you have questions about something. I'm someone who's like, kids are, they have sexual organs. They are, you know, as uncomfortable it is for me to talk to, you know, my nephew about growing pains and things like that. They are boys, right? My niece is a girl, and she, again, she has sexual organs. And so there are going to be times where they have some questions, you know?
Yeah.
And I'd rather them come to me than try to figure out. Because first of all, imagine if they're going out and trying to figure things out on their own and they're watching porn. Porn is like the most unrealistic thing. It is. And I do not want them thinking that that's real life, okay? Like, I don't need that in my life.
But baby, social media is like the new porn. Like, that's the other thing. That this goes back to that, right? Because they have, I was scrolling on Twitter yesterday and I was like, what the hell is this popping up on my Twitter? How do I block this?
Like, Facebook too. I constantly block stuff like, I do not want that on my timeline. But
girl,
again, like, it's one of those things, like, if they aren't talking to you, they're talking to someone, they're looking for this information, they're going to figure it out one way or another. And so even if it might be uncomfortable, it's still something that you need to be involved with. Because again, our roles as caregivers, as parents, is not to make these kids into, you know, who we want them to be, right? It's we help shape them and mold them, but at the end of the day, they're their own person. And so right. We really want to work with them to help guide and motivate and encourage. And you can only do those things if you are staying involved, if you are meeting them where they're at. And when kids are babies, I always say that's the easiest period for a parent or a caregiver, because your baby relies on you, especially if they're not walking or crawling. They literally have to rely on you to pick them up and move them to wherever you want them to move, right? And then they're stationary. Soon as that baby starts crawling, that is probably one of the scariest moments for a parent or a caregiver, because now you realize that they are going to be moving about without you, and you can't protect them from everything, right? And so one of the ways that you can give them some protection is to stay involved and give them space where they can come to you with anything, right? They can come to you and talk to you about anything, and there is no judgment. And even if, like, you know, if one of the kids come to us and they have something, you know, that I'm just not ready, you know, to hear at the time, I will say, like, okay, like, thank you for bringing that to my attention. Let me, like, let this marinate for a minute and let's circle back, right? Because sometimes I got to gather my thoughts, because I'm like, okay, how do I talk to a kid about this, right? And, you know, it could be some tough conversations. We've had to talk to our kids about substance use. We've had to talk to them about mental health. We've had to talk to them about death. And those are difficult conversations to have with adults. So only imagine how it is to have to talk to that about kids, you know, overdosing and things like that. And so, again, sometimes you have to take a step back and process this yourself and figure out how you as an adult are going to talk to a child. But I think it's so necessary, because, again, if we didn't answer those questions, the questions don't go away. Right.
Right.
You know, my mom, when she was alive and raising us, she used to always say, like, do what I say, not as I do. Right. And, you know, there was some things that were off limits to my mom. Let's be honest. Like, I could not come up to my mom and be like, hey, what? She was looking at me like, who do you think you're talking to first?
Right.
And I get it. Like, that's how she was raised. But I also think that it created a disconnect for so many opportunities for us to meet each other and for her to know more about me, right? And get me some understanding. And again, she didn't answer the question. I definitely wasn't going to just sit there and be like, well, I just don't know. No, I'm going to figure it out. And I can say that sometimes figuring out was not the best way of going about it. So I think, like, again, just creating safe spaces to have open dialogue with the kiddos is so important, even if it's uncomfortable, even if you have to take a moment to process it yourself and figure out how you can answer that question, is definitely something that I would say can help create so much dialogue and understanding. And it also strengthens your bond with your kiddos so that when they do come across something, they'll come to you first, right? And I think that that's important because we always want our kids to feel like no matter what happens in your life, you come to me and we'll figure it out, right? But if you meet them with that, this goes in that box, odds of them facing something and coming to you are going to slowly start to decrease.
Yeah. I have definitely similar thoughts, but I would even take it a step further to say, like, sometimes your kid is going to talk about something in a way that is not acceptable. And I think that what I often say to my mom is, like, there's a way that I want to interact with my son and a way that I want to kind of foster, like, his emotional health. But then there's also, like, the shit that's ingrained in me that it has been here for decades, right? So there are moments in our interactions when he is saying something to me in a way that is triggering. And I'm like, who's he talking to? Like, what? You know? And then part of me, you know, after I, like, can take a deep breath, I'm like, what's going on? Like, how can I help you? What do you need? Right? Like, but I think to that point, what I hope that parents can understand about a safe space is that if we don't teach our kids how to advocate for themselves, they're not going to just magically go out into the world and, like, be an assertive, self-sufficient, emotionally intelligent individual. And sometimes that is going to require us to check our egos. You know, sometimes we have to be willing to say, like, I didn't really like that. And how can I help you frame that in a better way? And not allow my own trauma, right? Like, I think about, like, none of the kids in my life, whether friends or family, had the space to, like, I don't know, say, Mom, I didn't like that you said that, or that made me feel X, Y, and Z. Like, or even if, you know, sometimes, some days he's like, don't touch me, or don't, you know, like, there's a way to say it, like you said, right? But also, there's a way to help them understand that there's a difference. Like, it's still important for you to tell me what you don't like, but there's a way to tell me what you don't like.
Yeah.
Right. And I think sometimes we get, and myself included, like I said, there's some days I'm like, who do he, like, do he not know? Like, I still come from the nuck if you buck, you know, I am not even a generation. I'm barely a few years removed from that parenting strategy. Yeah. Like, that's what I grew up on. Like, I grew up on, like, don't start and I won't be none. Like, you do what I say. Don't, you know what I mean? And so I know that's not the role I want to play, but I know that that shit is still in me. Like, that urge to, like, shut shit down, like, that is still in me because that's just what I experienced. You know what I mean? And again, I know I'm not special. Every kid in the 90s experienced that. Like, I'm not special, you know what I mean? But I know that what I know is that there are lots of clients of mine who are recovering from that type of mentality, that type of, you know, parental strategies. And I just know I don't want to do that. And so I think sometimes creating a safe space is about checking your ego and realizing that your kid, like, I think also just, like, we have a way of, like, deciding that the behaviors of kids are just automatically like with malicious intent. Like they knew what they were doing. They were trying to make me mad. Sometimes, maybe, possibly. But is there another way we could look at that? Like maybe they watched you do that shit. You know what I mean? And they were like, okay, well, I see mom over here doing this to dad and she getting what she wants, so I'm gonna try it. You know, like, again, I think it's something that we have to be willing to look at. And I think, you know, to me, a safe space is an environment where your kid can ask questions and challenge you and say, mom, I didn't like when you said that, you know, I didn't like, you know, when you ignored me, when I X, Y, and Z, or I don't like whatever. Like we have to be willing to, the thing that I think about the most when I'm thinking about raising my son is what kind of adult do I want him to be? Yeah. Right. Like what, and maybe that's not the right perspective to take. And it's not, I'm not trying to be perfect at this, but like, I just consider like, okay, if I do this today and this becomes a habit of mine as I interact with him, what kind of adult is that going to create? You know, is he going to be someone who can communicate effectively? Is he going to be someone who can own his feelings? Is he going to be someone who can say no, you know, without needing to, you know, add on anything else? Can he say no and know that no's a complete sentence? Like what kind of kid I pour into today is going to be an adult one day, you know? And I think, and I know that for a lot of us, that's a lot. It's a lot to like, some of us are just trying to get through the day. And I realize that that's a privilege that I have, like that I can think that way, you know, that I'm, you know, wanting to think that way. For some parents, it's like, I ain't got time for that. Like, I got kids, I got bills, like, I got to get these clothes ironed, I got to get these kids in the bed, I got to get some. So I get that, like, I do believe that a lot of the new kind of parenting styles, or not even new, right, but the ones that we are, you know, for some of us being introduced to for the first time, I do think there is some privilege that comes with that, right? Because you can think strategically about how you want to approach your kid when you ain't stressed out, when you got food in your belly, and when you got your bills paid. Like that is some
system.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I do think that there are some privileges to that. And I don't take that for granted. I would not argue that. Like, yeah, I am privileged in that respect, you know? And so that's to me what I consider safe spaces. And I think it would be much helpful. It would be very helpful to this generation of kids if we took some time to create some safety at home. Because if your kid don't feel safe nowhere else, home should be the place that they feel the most safe. You know? Yeah, and so I'm committed to that. And I know, and some days it's easier than others. Some days I'm like, yeah, I totally fucked that up today. Right. You know,
some days you got it, some days you don't.
But yeah,
I think the important thing is like you acknowledge it, and that's one of the things mm-hmm. that we practice. Like even if I do lose my temper, even if Mercy loses his temper, we always circle back and be like, you know what, I could have handled that better. I didn't yep. like that I went from 0 to 100. You know, I apologize, right? Which is so funny because I got zero apologies.
Zero. Apology, like.
Yeah, no, like there, what do you mean I'm apologizing? But I think like it also is something that we decided we wanted to do because like you said, like what type of kid am I trying to raise, right?
Yeah.
How do I want them to be impacted when they're adult? I want kids who they can acknowledge and be accountable for how their behaviors impact others, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even if you have the best intentions, if it impacts someone a certain way, I would hope if you value that interaction that you would listen to them and you would circle back and acknowledge that maybe the way that you intended something to happen did not meet that mark, and that you,
yeah.
you know, you acknowledge that you could have did it differently, right?
Right.
I think like that's so major. And if we can model that, I think that it helps them to figure out, you know what? Like the adults in my life are doing it.
Yeah.
It can't be that, you know, far off. It's not where, you know, they're telling me to do something, but they won't do it themselves, which, you know, was a time period where, you know, like I said, my mom used to say, you do what I say, not as I do. So I think, like, if you can model that, it again creates that idea that you're not going to be perfect every day. And I'm not looking for perfection. I'm looking for you to acknowledge when you haven't, like, hit something and you're willing to, like, circle back and figure out how you could do better. Like, that's what life is. Life is not that you're going to wake up and you are literally going to have, like, open your windows and butterflies and rainbows and people are singing and dancing outside your window and that's how your day is. Like, you are going to deal with storms. You are going to deal with sunshine. But how you respond in those moments say a lot about you as a person. And so, like, even if you are dealing with storms, you should still treat the people that you care about with decency and understanding and kindness. And even when you're dealing with the sunshine, you should do the same, right? And so, like, again, sometimes you are going to be impacted by what you're going through in life. And that's okay. Like, you're not going to be perfect, but, like, how do you address that? How do you address that imperfection? It's so major. And I think, like, if we can model that, I think that it helps kids to be like, it's doable, right? It's not just like you're telling me to do something that's so foreign and I've never seen you actually do it. Or you're holding me to an expectation that you yourself are not doing, right? I just think, like, that is something that can really benefit. Like, you know, again, parenting, there's tons of books on it, but this stuff is like day by day. You know, some days I wake up and I'm like, it's a war zone.
Not a war zone.
Girl, some days it's a war zone. Some days I'm like, oh, I got it all together. Like, it's perfect. Everyone is falling in line. And other days I'm like, oh, what dragon am I slaying today? You know,
right.
But again, like, that's just life. And that's, you have the responsibility of helping mold an individual, which is like one of the biggest gifts that you could ever have. And so, like, you have to be mindful about that. You have to be intentional about it. You deserve that as well as them. And I think the other thing is that with parenting, you're also healing and addressing things that you wish you got as a child. And so, like, thinking about that of, like, you know, how you would have wanted to be received, how you would have wanted to handle things or things to be handled when they were not feeling good to you, right? Again, I think you're, like, reparenting yourself. And I think that that's also a blessing because you can heal things that maybe you didn't even know it impacted you a certain way. And now you're having these experiences and you're like, wait a minute, this is true.
Right.
This triggered me a little bit too much. Something's going on here and I'm going to pay attention to it. Right. And again, you're modeling this behavior to this kiddo who gets to see that in real time. So I think that, that's the beauty of it all.
Yeah. That part about reparenting, I think, is so true. Cause we had a cookout a few weeks ago and one of my husband's friends, his friend and his wife, were visiting and, you know, I was saying to them that, like, what I've learned about parenting is it reveals more about yourself than it does about your kid. You know, it reveals a lot about what you didn't get or what you thought you got that you realized you didn't, or things you thought you had healed from. And you like, oh, I ain't healed from this, not one bit. Like, I still got some more healing to do, you know, and all of that is okay, you know, but I think it's a very unique experience that I don't know that you get that level of I don't know that you get that level of awareness about who you are. I'm sure you do, but because I think marriage is another area where you learn a lot about what it means to be a teammate, what it means to show up for somebody else, you know, what it means to serve versus be more concerned with how you're getting something, right? But parenting in particular, it tells you so much about yourself. And I think that has been my experience, you know, and I think that that reparenting piece, man, baby, like, that reparenting piece is man, it is. It definitely is. So yeah. So the next question is cultural competency, right? Because again, there are layers to the cultural piece and mental health, and not even just from a race and ethnicity perspective, right? But, you know, culture is very vast. So how can caregivers develop cultural competency in addressing mental health, and what resources are available for guidance? Go ahead. You can go.
I was going to say, so one of the things is, so I spoke about growing up, my mom is or was Puerto Rican, and my dad is Black. And there were very strong culture norms within our family.
Yeah.
Mental health was something that definitely impacted our family, and not just our, you know, our core family, but our extended family as well. And, but it was something that wasn't talked about, you know? And there also was this strong belief that if something was going on, you went to the church, right? You prayed away. If they were still struggling, you weren't praying hard enough. Medication was not something that we talked about. Mental health was also something that was like a taboo thing to talk about. What happened in your household stayed in your household. If you were talking to anyone on the outside about what was going on in your house, that was a big no-no. And so I would say, like, for that, I think that it's important for your caregivers and loved ones to understand what is the culture norm inside your household, but also what it is that you want to kind of set the standard for, right? So even if the norm is that we typically don't talk about mental health, and maybe, you know, you've had some distant relatives who struggle with mental health, but it just wasn't talked about. If you are dealing with a kiddo or someone in your actual core family who is struggling with something, you can't shy away from it. You can't just take that same tone of, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, I just don't believe in that. My dad tells me that all the time. And he knows that I work in the mental health field. He knows I work with the substance abuse field. Anytime I talk about treatment, anything like that, he tells me he just doesn't believe in it, which is fine. Because he's just not in that place to understand it. I mean, he supports me in my profession, but when it comes to understanding that further in context to like our loved ones, he just doesn't support it.
Yeah.
And I get it. Like, you know, that's his norm or whatever. But the thing is that it doesn't go away. And we can't say that someone is struggling with something or there's something wrong with them, but we're not willing to tap into resources that could help support them, right? If we are sick, odds are we are going to tell someone to go and seek a doctor or to take medication. But with mental health, especially in the cultures that I was raised in, it was taboo to tell someone to talk to a therapist. It was taboo to tell someone to take medication. They need to pray more. They need to go to church. They don't need to talk to a outside provider. And this is not something that is only in the African-American culture or the Hispanic culture. This is also something that is taboo in like the Asian culture. You know, you are very private about your things that you feel like do not showcase your family well, right? But the thing is that in not acknowledging it and not utilizing these resources, it does not make the problem go away, and it actually does more damage. And so the resources that I would say is, if you know someone is struggling, a loved one is struggling, tap into resources. One of the things I'm a big advocate for is utilizing your EAP, employee assistance program, because it's oftentimes you have a free amount of counseling services that you have access to prior to going to transition to insurance. As we know, could be costly, especially if you have private insurance, because there's normally like a copay. And so if finances are tight, a lot of people are going to pick eating or paying their bills over going to pay a copay for a mental health professional. And I get it. Like, look, we have a hierarchy of needs, right? And
yep.
eating and taking care of your home is like at the core, right? Your basic functioning. But they don't go away. And it oftentimes can exacerbate the issue. It can also make someone feel alone, unseen, like they, and then sometimes what happens is that they try to substitute what they're feeling with other things. And so we see an increase in risky behaviors. We see an increase in taking substances. And that is a whole nother animal, right? So now we have the mental health piece, but now we're adding in other things. And when you take a substance to try and cope with the mental health piece, we all know like that is its own animal, right? And so that can create other symptoms that have nothing to do with the actual mental health aspect of things. And so now we have to get you clean and sober to then go back to see like what was at its core, right? But first we have to deal with the surface stuff. We can't even get below the surface because the surface stuff is like red flags. So I think like those are things that I always tell people. And I always tell people like with mental health, there are tons of providers. It's like millions of fish in the sea. Interview your providers. A lot of times, providers will have a consult, a free consult where you could talk to them for, I have some people do it for 15 minutes. Some people I've seen do it for 30 minutes where you can consult with them to see like, is this going to be a good fit? Do you understand my culture? Do you understand my needs and who I am as a human, right? And how I'm showing up? How are you showing up, right? Yeah. Because that's important. Sometimes you can have people who are talking to you about something and you don't understand it in their context. And that can cause you to kind of throw up red flags, right? And you can actually escalate something that doesn't need to be escalated because you don't understand their culture norms. I just saw a TikTok the other day and a Hispanic student just created a play and it's talking about her time that she went and saw a healthcare professional and her English was her secondary language. And she had talked about like dreaming in Spanish and just talked about different things and like, but it was like culture wise and there was a disconnect and they actually hospitalized her and gave her medication. And she was like hospitalized for a good bit. And she wasn't able to call family or anything like that. And so it was a whole experience. And again, like, it's so important to understand culture norms because whereas you could say something like, oh, I dream in a certain language, right? If you're not understanding them, like that may seem like, you know, maybe they're hearing voices or, you know, some people say, you know, this was speaking to me and things like that, but that could be in their culture, very norm, right? But if you don't understand that, you don't have the context, you might be thinking from a mental health standpoint without that culture competency. And so now you're seeing like they're hearing voices, auditory hallucination, you know, all of these different things that could mean that they are going through an active psychosis, which is, you know, concerning and you want to act appropriately. But again, everything is in context, right? So I think like it's so important to understand that, but that's providers. As a parent or caregiver, you also have to understand what your culture norms are, but also what's the standard of practice that you want to implement within your family, right? And just saying like, oh, well, this is just how things are. Again, suicide is the second leading death for children, right? So when we think about that statistics, we need to be more careful about just saying like, this is a norm. This is the expectation. Because if someone is feeling depressed, if someone is struggling with suicide ideation, praying it away doesn't mean it goes away. Ignoring it doesn't mean it goes away. Saying we don't talk about that doesn't make it go away. Your kids are going to find an answer for themselves. And if you're not guiding that and involved in that conversation, sometimes the answer that they find is not one that's going to sit well with you. And so I think we have to be mindful of that. We have to be willing to have these difficult conversations and challenge what our norms challenge what the expectation is. And again, just saying like, this is just something we do, right? This is just the norm. We don't talk about, you know, my grandma would say it all the time, like, our family doesn't do medication. Well, Mita, I've been at some family gatherings and you guys should be handing out medications as souvenirs because some people need medication, honey. Like, right. Y'all need to, like, it's a party favor at this point. Like, mm-hmm. You get some medication, you get some medication. My cousin says all the time, if she ever wins a lottery, she's like, you're getting therapy, you're getting therapy, you're getting
Right.
So again, like, you know, again, just because it's the norm within your culture doesn't mean that it's appropriate for that, for you. And you have to challenge that. You have to be willing to seek out resources. But again, you can seek out resources that there are therapists in their bios will say they are, you know, culture competent. You are someone who's a perfect example of this. You literally put in your bio that you work with minority women. Like, mm-hmm. You work with Black people. You are mm-hmm. well-equipped and well-versed in African Americans. Like, mm-hmm. This is something that you put out there. And there's a ton of other therapists who also will promote this. And I think it's important, you know, if you are someone who identifies as the LGBTQ plus population, there are therapists who will put that they are well-versed in that. And how important is it for you to sit next to someone and bare your soul, right? And they have an understanding of who you are and the cultures that you come from. I think that is so important. So I think like those are things that you can utilize and resources that are there for you, right? Mm-hmm. You don't just go and get all these trainings just because you want to get all these trainings. Them things cost money.
Money, girl.
You know, do it because you have a passion, right? And so like you are a perfect example of someone who is dealing with something who identifies in these different identities that they want to have a therapist who's like, I get it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I can, when you say something, it's not like it's so abnormal that I'm just like, wait, what did you say? Like, no, mm-hmm. I can talk your language. I can literally mm-hmm. meet you where you're at. I can make, like, we can have an interaction where I feel comfortable. You feel comfortable mm-hmm. so that you can bear your soul and we can figure things out together. I can help mm-hmm. guide you. But if you don't feel comfortable and not seen and heard, then I can't do my job because there's only going to be parts of you that you open up and let me in. And we can't do the work if you're not willing to like open up and be honest with yourself mm-hmm. and me. So I think like those are things like, again, just like someone like you who is so adamant of making people feel seen. That's the type of therapist you want. Those are the mm-hmm. providers. Those are the resources that you want. Someone who literally explains their background and you read and you're like, they got me. Like, they get me. Mm-hmm. They understand when I'm saying something a certain way and I'm using my own terms and slang or, you know, however you are talking. Like, I don't have to code switch, right? Yeah. Like, I can come to my session and I can be myself, which mm-hmm. is so important. Yeah. So I would say, like, those things are definitely key. And those are things that I would say would be resources that providers or caregivers and parents would want to utilize and look for. Because again, you want your kids to feel seen and heard and not feeling like they can't be themselves or that they say something and it's taken completely out of context. And now they feel like they're being punished for something that had no ill intent and it wasn't even what that person reacted the way that they did is so strong that now the idea of going to see a mental health professional is like, I ain't doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that ruins their whole experience.
Right. I think the other cultural piece is, it's kind of like at the intersection of like cultural competency and just this wave of like mental health jargon that has kind of, you know, gone to all forms of social media and things like that. I think that what I would encourage parents to understand is that a diagnosis does not excuse your kid's behavior either, or yours or whoever, right? The cultural piece that I think is important for parents to understand is that a particular diagnosis or a series of symptoms merely explain why your kid is doing something. It does not absolve them of what they're doing, and it does not excuse what they're doing. So if you are a new parent, or if you are like, maybe you've had your own reservations about, you know, mental health, and you're, you know, trying to show up for your kid in a way that it maybe is different than the way, you know, you envisioned yourself showing up for your kid, remember that these behaviors do not absolve your kid of their behavior. It does not excuse what they are doing. It merely gives kind of language and, like, you know, background to, like, why they're doing something. So say, for example, you have a kid who's diagnosed with ADHD. They're very impulsive. Maybe they struggle with, maybe they're easily distracted, you know. So if they don't wash the dishes, you know what I mean, because they were distracted by something, you don't get to, like, say, oh, well, he has ADHD. Like, no, like, you have ADHD, and what are the metrics that we need to put in place to help you stay focused? Do we need to limit, you know, your TV access? Do we need to, like, come in the house and do chores first? Like, this is the moment where you and your child can work together to figure out, like, what are the best ways to kind of help you navigate and manage through these particular symptoms, right? Same with depression. If you have a kid that's depressed and they have no motivation, like, you can acknowledge that depression may be causing it, and what are some things that we can do to help that? So, you know, the thing that I would do is I would go over, like, you know, are you eating? Are you sleeping? Are you showering? Are you getting outside? Like, here are things that we can do to help you kind of improve this lack of motivation, right? So don't let a diagnosis, you know, kind of, and I don't know if this is even the right word, but, like, don't let a diagnosis kind of, like, stifle them, right? They need to have some resiliency around these things, right? And the only way that they can do that is if they recognize that these symptoms are just a part of who I am. They are not all of me. So I don't get to, like, over-identify with these symptoms. I need to be able to make some separation between, you know, this being a small piece of me, and how do I, like, rise above, you know, the symptoms that I am experiencing so that I can live a life that I can be proud of. So that's one other piece of this I would encourage, is, like, don't let these diagnoses make you think that, like, oh, my kid's just anxious and they're never going to go outside and play with kids, or, like, they're never going to be able to drive. Like, no, they can. Like, they can, with the right guidance, with the right, you know, tools and right strategies. And that might include therapy, but that also is going to include your willingness to, like, show up for them and, like, motivate them and push them to rise above and push past some of those symptoms. So that's the other piece of this I think I would like to highlight. Like, let's just kind of create that distinction between, like, symptoms help to understand why your kid is doing something, but does not absolve them or excuse what they're doing.
I love that. Like, and thank you for bringing that up, because I think that that's important, because sometimes people don't want to get kids diagnosed because they feel like, you know, they'll be labeled and things like that. But again, you set the tone, right? You set the example. And so, like, if you are holding them accountable, and you are putting things in place to aid in supporting them, you can then take that and help them apply that in school. So instead of having an IEP, they could have a 504 plan, right? Mm-hmm. That is going to deal with their emotional well-being. And again, if you have a 504 plan for your kiddo and you feel like it's not being followed, and it's, or it's not supporting them the way that they need to, you can then call a meeting. You can get different resources that involve. The one thing about a 504 plan that's really positive, and I just learned this last week, is that it actually protects the kid, that if there are behavioral issues, they can't just escalate it without kind of following a certain criteria and following different steps. So it's not where if your kid continues to have behavior issues that they just go ahead and remove them and send them to an alternative school. That 504 plan is kind of like a protection that can help them and getting the resources that they need and advocating for them. And again, you can advocate for your kiddo. So I think like it's so important to be knowledgeable about these resources, not look at them as a black and white type of thing or a taboo, but also like even if your kid does have a diagnosis, like you said, doesn't mean that they can just go and act a damn fool and you're like, oh, well, they have this. No, little Tommy needs to get his act together. Like, little Tommy right. can't be running around in class smacking people on the head because he has ADHD. Like, no, little Tommy needs to get some skills put in place because he can't go smacking people around. There's tons of people who work with us, you know, at the company I work with who have all types of diagnoses and they still show up and do what is expected of them. And so, like, I think, like, that's really important. It gives context to, you know, some struggles that they may have and maybe there's different aids that need to be put in place to support them. And that's not saying that, you know, you completely forget that, but I think it's important to not say like, it just gives them like a get out of jail free card. Again, Tommy can't be smacking because little Tommy smacked my kid. We're going to have a problem. I don't care if he has
little Tommy going to get smacked back. Like that's what's going to happen. He's going to get smacked back, you know? And no, we don't promote violence, but like, hey, like, you know.
Little Tommy got to learn boundaries, you know.
So, absolutely. Which is a skill that they can learn. You know what I mean? Right. So, again, this is something that can be.
One way or another, you know. Right. It's up to you. But, so, yeah, no, I think that that's important, though. And again, it's that modeling of behaviors. And again, giving your kids safe space and showing them what the expectation is. But also teaching them what the expectation is. Okay, if you're struggling to stay on task, I love that you said, like, you know, maybe when you come in, you got to do your chores right away. Maybe we have to have a chore list and I have to write down what the expectation is so you can literally see it and be a visual learner and check off, okay, I did this, I did this. Okay, all the chore stuff is done. I can move on to the next thing, right?
Right.
So again, That makes sense. That's another resource and aid that you can apply to further help your kiddo. And I think like that's really good.
Yeah.
So I will say we have a couple more questions, but this is going to be a third part because this is something that we're both very passionate about. I think it's really important context to be talking about. So we're definitely going to pick this up for our next episode and we will not be weeks out, we promise. I just want to say, you know, I am glad that we're back. I'm glad that we're talking about this. And to wrap this all up, we'll have some resources in our bios that will kind of just give you, if you're looking for information, on statistics for mental health, resources for kiddos for mental health concerns, substance use, any of those things, we'll have some resources in the bio for you to look through. Please be mindful when you are on social media and you are trying to gather knowledge. Just be careful of who you're getting your knowledge from. Try to fact check it. Try to go to people who have data. The thing about data and research is that you can screw the information. So you can always make data match what you want it to match, especially if you only are including certain things. So it doesn't give context. So just be careful about where you get your information from and just be mindful about that. So we'll include that. We also will include our social media. So again, you can reach out to us and access any question. If you have certain information that you're wanting us to include in our next couple of episodes, please let us know. I know one of the episodes that we're actually going to do is talk about mental health and religion. And we actually are going to have a guest to kind of cover that with us. So that's something that we're looking forward to. And we would like to add more people to come in and just kind of give their expert opinions on things. That would be really good. But to wrap up this episode, we're going to end it with Dom. What is one way you are choosing to soar these next 2 weeks?
Let's see. I am choosing to soar by Taking advantage of my my work schedule right now. I know that I would love those spaces to be filled with people. But I think when it is pretty busy, it can be a bit overwhelming. So I can use that time to read. I'm reading like a couple books right now, trying to get through them. And I am needing to work on that article. So I could use, you know, those open spaces in my schedule to do that. So I just want to take advantage of the time in my schedule that's open right now. Hopefully it can be filled, but if they can't, then there are some things that I can do just to use that time appropriately. So I'm reading a book right now. One of the books I'm reading right now is called Platonic. It's about the science of attachment and how that can coincide with your friendships. And so I'm actually, the article that I'm writing right now is about like watering your female friendships as a female, or as a woman. So that's something that I have been interested in, and you know, just, you know, because attachment style is like, or attachment theory rather, is a theory that I am very obsessed with. I would say I really love attachment theory. I think it has a lot of great insight to our the way our caregiving relationships really have an impact on our adult relationships, you know, including friendships. And so that's a book that I'm trying to finish. I'm also reading, I'm reading Daring Greatly by Brené Brown, I think it is. And I've been reading that for a while, just trying to get through that. So there's a couple of books that I'm reading, and I've done a little bit more journaling lately. So I just kind of want to just kind of use that time in my work schedule to just do some of the things that I, you know, don't always have the time to do. So that's how I am soaring for the next few weeks. What about you?
I think I plan to soar by, I'm doing a presentation. So this month is PTSD Awareness Month. And so mm-hmm. I'll be doing a presentation at work for veterans who I have so much respect for and really a population that I love to work with. So I'll be doing that this week. And I'm really trying to work on my notes for work because it's been very, very busy. So definitely taking time to do my more admin work this week.
Same.
In the next week. Because notes can get the best of you. And then other ways I'm just choosing to soar is, like I said, my niece graduated. Spending time with her this summer, getting her prepared to go off to college and live on campus. My oldest nephew just got accepted into the Honor Society, so he has to do some stuff this summer for community service. So we'll be getting that squared away. They have some summer camp, so getting ready for that. Soccer is getting ready to pick up, so got to get ready for that because I'm gonna be outside.
You are busy, child.
Girl. And then just the baby. She keeps me busy. She's on her 3-month development, so making sure she hits her developmental milestone. So right now we're in the tummy time. And starting to process the rolling over phase. And she's grabbing things, so she's learning about her hands and things like that. Loves to grab my hair. but so she's learning to do that. And she's also learning facial expression. So
Look at that.
Yeah. And starting to like coo and laugh and stuff. So I just plan on, you know, these next couple of weeks, just really being immersed in the kiddos, making sure that they're getting what they need from me and my husband, also finding time to continue to date my husband because we have a lot going on with work and the kids and the dogs. And so we can quickly get very busy and forget about putting in time and effort for each other. So definitely want to figure out the balance for that. And then we have our 4th of July cookout coming up.
We do. You know, we do.
Got to get prepared for that. Cause you know, I go all out for events. So
yeah, we know.
Trying to figure out some fun stuff for the kiddos, thinking about doing like a water slide, but we'll see.
Wow. They would love that.
Yeah. So that's just what I choose to soar. Just really being immersed in the family. And getting on these freaking progress notes. That's the man. My assistant. But you know, you have to do them. It's a part of the job. So the admin, you know, it's not the fun stuff, but it's necessary. So
it's not fun.
Show
at
your
all.
Work.
It's yeah. Not,
but
if you didn't document it, it didn't happen. So you gotta exactly. document it.
Exactly. Even though it takes forever. But yeah, so that's how I'm choosing to soar.
Great. So don't forget to, you know, reach out to us. Again, we will post this podcast on YouTube or anywhere else that you get podcasts. Make sure to like, share, and subscribe to our podcast. You can always reach out to us on our social medias. So, you know, we have a But What If I Soar Instagram and Twitter. We also have our business account. So Free to Be Counseling Services is mine. And then Social MacGyver is Deborah Ron's. Yeah, just, you know, and if you have ideas and questions about the episode, you can always email us at butwhatifisoar@gmail.com. So, yeah, we are, you know, definitely open to any ideas. Like Deborah Ron said earlier, we definitely want to have some guests on. So yeah, we're open to any ideas and things that we can do to kind of continue to grow the platform. So we hope that you all are doing well, and we look forward to revisiting probably a part 3 to children and mental health in the next few weeks.
Yes. Thank you for tuning in, and have a wonderful next couple of weeks.
All righty. Bye.
Thank you for tuning in and allowing us to be vulnerable together as we soar. If you enjoyed this episode and are interested in hearing more from us, make sure you hit that follow button so you are alerted when a new episode drops, and leave a rating and a review below. Our podcast can be found on all major podcast platforms, as well as YouTube. We'd love to hear your comments and how you're choosing to soar these next couple of weeks. Interact with us on Instagram at @ButWhatIfISoar, as well as on our business pages at Free to Be Counseling Services and at Social MacGyver. Let's continue ascending or gliding, even amongst the turbulence.